tell him who is a tzaddik, a person, a chacham, who knows these mitzvos and does them. That's the definition. That's what you tell the ger. That's the definition of tzaddik. A chacham who yodeyas and mitzvos a person that keeps the halachas because he knows them, he understands them. That's the definition of tzaddik. The Varaduk is not totally erroneous. The Varaduk is not completely off. Because you see over here that Chazal tell you to implement a certain type of activity that will break the emotion. You see the Chazal do say that. So they're not completely wrong. See? Now, what does that do with the first part of the memra? The first part of the memra is, the first part of the statement is like this. It says, Mimayat Ba'asik, you should reduce your business involvements, and you should spend your main time, main part of your day should be spent in, your main preoccupation should be with the Torah and Chachma. What does it mean? It means like this. It means because a person's ego, a person has a narcissistic ego, a person looks for a type of identification that will give him respect. That will give him respect. That's the nature of a person. He wants to feel a certain respectability about himself. Now, how does a person achieve this in a society? By being identified as a professional. I'm a lawyer. I'm a physician. There's a certain, well, I'm a great businessman, whatever it might be, you see. But a person looks for a niche in the society in which to satisfy that craving. You see, that need, to satisfy that need. That's why a person is not mema'et ba'asik. That's why a person, when you ask him, what are you doing? He'll say, I'm practicing law. He won't say, I'm learning Gemara now. You see, because the person, when you ask him what he's doing, what you're asking him is you're putting on the line, what is your importance in the society? What do you do that expresses and that gives you that identification that you're an important person in this society? So the person will say, naturally, it's his profession. This is what I am. I'm a doctor, a lawyer, whatever it might be. See, accountant, this is my importance in the society. So what the Chazal is saying is, that's really, Chazal will teach you an interesting thing. Why is it difficult for a person to be Mimayat Ba'asik? Do you think, because he needs money, that's why he can't Mimayat Ba'asik? No, you're making a mistake. He doesn't need money. No, he doesn't need money. A person can live in a way and be very happy with very little. Very little. The Rambam makes the point in the Ma'ariv. So why doesn't a person do that? A person will tell you the reason why he doesn't do it is because it's too difficult from a physical standpoint. His needs. He must have his necessities. But what Chazal say is that's not only an excuse, it's an untruth. The reason why he has the need for these things is not because, in fact, you see, a $5,000 couch is one that is more comfortable to sit on. It's not the reason. Very little to do it. He could sit in a very plain chair and he will be even more comfortable than the expensive one. The expensive one is not the comfortable. That's what I found anyway. But the thing is that a person, the reason why he needs these things is because of the self-importance. Self-importance. The identification. A person wants, you should give him some identification that he is an important person. He's worth something in a society. Here's the thing. One time, the Rebbe Katz one time told me, it's a true thing. He said that they praise a Baron Cutler because a Baron Cutler, when he came to his house, there was no furniture there. And it's true. I mean, he had a little rickety chair. About 100 years old, and that's it. He sat down this way. There, wasn't it? He had to hold the safer. He was happy, that's it. So he says that people praise a Baron Cutler. He says, but it's really not fair. Why? Because he says the Baron Cutler was a Gadol B'Torah. So that was his thing. But an average person, if he has a rickety chair, he's not a Gadol B'Torah. What is he? He's a nobody. He's a nothing. So he must have the nice furniture because this is necessary for his self-esteem. The Baron Cutler didn't need it, you see. But the truth of the matter is, it is in fact so, that the reason why the average person requires a nice home, a nice furniture, and an identification with a nice profession, a respectable profession, is because he's the egoistic fantasy. There's no doubt about it. The only thing is, if Von Cutler didn't satisfy the egoist defense of learning, his learning was what he did because he enjoyed it. He was a schmarr. Really, this was the greatest thing in life for him. Because he was involved in something outside of himself. Not the learning wasn't a means for himself. It was something outside of himself. But the fact is true. What the Rebbe said is true. That most people, it's not the comfort of the furniture. It's not the comfort. It has nothing to do with it. Necessities are really not necessities. Necessities are only necessary insofar as the ego is concerned, most of them. Very few of them are necessary. The Rambam points this out in the Maariv Ruchim very, very clearly. That a person, and what the Rambam means is not an austerity program. What the Rambam means is that you don't have to live in dire need. You could be very just as comfortable. It's just in your mind you think that you're not going to be. And the reason why you think that way is because the need for identification and for your own self-importance. That's what the member says. The member says like this: if you are not memayit be'esek, don't think the reason why you're not memayit be'esek is because of your needs. Nothing to do with your needs. The reason why you're not memayit be'esek is because of the egoistic desires, egoistic fantasies in there. That's what prevents you from being memayit be'esek. And that's why they tie, because to identify yourself as a Ben Torah in a society is a tremendously difficult blow to the ego. A man asks you, what are you doing? And you say, I'm sitting and learning all day. There's a certain look on the part of the receiver of that statement, a little look of askance, like, well, something, he couldn't make it, this poor individual. He's very, very nice, he's nice, you know. He won't embarrass you, but he will look down at you as a man who cannot make it in the society. You see? That blow is hard to take. That's what Chazal is saying. That's what Chazal is teaching. Don't fool yourself. Not just our society. It's the society of Chazal, the same thing. And it's any society in which the masses of individuals will live, because perfection being rare, the masses have got to establish importance for themselves. There's no way that this instinct is going to be thwarted. So unless everybody's a chacham, there is always going to be don't fool yourself into thinking that it just happens to be our society. We live in a society with people just like they lived 100 years ago and 1,000 years ago and 2,000, 5,000 years ago. The same type of thing. Man's nature hasn't changed over the past 5,000 years. It's the same Adam, the same person. It'll be the same way for the next 1,000 years. One philosopher said very well. He says, there will always be the masters. And he's right. There will always be the masters. It has to be that way. Because very few people are capable of breaking away. Yemosu Mashiach, I'm talking with the exclusion of the concept of Yemosu Mashiach. That's a different thing. But that means a whole revolution in society. But until Yemosu Mashiach, there will never be a breakdown of this type of a life. And since people have to live, and they're not going to live according to Chachma, they're going to have to build up important things that render them, that give to them that satisfaction, the egoistic satisfaction, because they cannot get away from the instinctual. That's the nature of the situation. That's why the advice for Chazal is advice in every generation. Makes the old fools have different generations. All generations are the same, because all generations are people, and people are the same, so they're all the same. There's a little bit of this and that. On the surface is different, but the underlying people are the same. If you read dialogues of Plato, you'll see the exact same types of people with the rebellious youth, the same thing after. There's no different things. Only the fool thinks is different. Yeah. But Talta Minatola. Yeah, all right. Then batalta min atara, batalta min atara, yesh lecha betelem habei kinegda. As Rishi said, he says, if you were mevatel Torah, if you wasted your time, and you didn't involve yourself in the study of Torah, yesh lecha betelem habei kinegda. Interesting statement. It means there are many other, the plain shot is, most learned, it means there are many other things that you can get involved in. Of course, in other words, you wouldn't be doing this. But the Rambam says, the inyan betelem harbe kinegdecha, what does it mean? Hushiyesh dvarim harbe hamavatlam. There are many things that a person that wastes his time, wastes his life. The itztarchu, and will become necessary, l'mish nisasek b'hem, for anyone that gets involved in them. Ukishalot nisasek b'torah, if you don't involve yourself in Torah, yatrit chazman be'echod min advarim ahem. So the time, you're going to consume your time with one of these things. Well, I mean, it seems so obvious. Of course, why should a person be mevatel Torah to begin with? Because he wants to do other things. So what is it telling you? That if you're mevatel Torah, you're going to be involved in many other things. What else? Why should it be? Why? What's his motivation to mevatel Torah? It sounds like an empty statement. Okay? Yeah. The Rabbeinu was a totally different shot. But that's the way the Rambam learns. And that's the way the Rambam learns. Rashi also learns that. Our Rashi. I told you, it's not really Rashi. But it, whoever it was, the Pirush, he learned the same way. Kama v'chama dvarim tintzol yavo liyotcha shet batel mehem. Many, many things will come to you that you're going to waste your time with. What is that? Supposed to be a negative statement? Yeah. Yeah. Negative statement. And then he says, and in contradistinction to this, he says, v'imamalta b'torah, if you did work in Torah, yesh sochar harbe litullah. There is a great reward to be given to you. What does that mean? I mean, how does that, that's a great reward. I mean, the whole statement sounds awry. I mean, if you don't learn Torah, so then you're going to do a lot of other things. And if you do learn Torah, so then you have a lot of reward. What's the other? What's the yeah, there's no, the statement is not formulated. It has no symmetry, the statement. So what's the chart? The chart is like this. The chart is, what Chazal was saying is that a person is under the illusion that if he doesn't study Torah, because study Torah is a hard thing, it means you have to withdraw yourself from your instinctual pull and involve yourself in the study of Torah. It's not an easy thing, it's a difficult thing. The mere fact they see that so few people in the world can do it shows you it must indeed be a difficult thing. Okay. But a person has an illusion. He thinks that if he will not, he looks at Torah as a burdensome thing. It's difficult. He has to learn the words, he has to learn the pshat. I mean, until a person can become a London, it's a long road. And then even after you become a London, you find that it's not so, that there's a long, it just opens up bigger and bigger. It's a burdensome thing. A person feels it's a burdensome thing. So he feels that if he didn't have this involvement, he fantasizes that he'd be able to do things that he'd like to do. Have time to relax. Like to do things that he'd really enjoy doing. That's probably the greatest fantasy that stands before a person and prevents him from involving himself in Torah. The fantasy of the illusion that he'd really be doing things in his time that he'd totally enjoy. See? Chazal tell you that's not true. Not the case. Oh, yes. The imbatalta midibri Torah. If you were mevater, if you wasted your time, you didn't involve yourself in the Torah, yesh tevorim harbe hamevatlim, v'yitztarcho l'mishin esasek b'ayim, u'kishalot esasek b'Torah, yet ridcho hazman be'echod min advarim ha'ilo. But Chazal says an interesting thing, that you will not find a person that's not involved in Torah that's relaxing. There's no such thing. No such phenomenon as a man who's not studying and he's relaxing. Impossible. Doesn't exist. Why? Because the nature of a person's psyche is such that his ego will always find something that he must burden himself with and that he has to do. You see? He'll set up something for himself. I have seen people that go on vacation with a whole list of things that they have to do on this vacation. It's like an amazing phenomenon. Taking pictures and this, there's no enjoyment at all, and then he comes back exhausted. See? He first rests when he goes to work, and he only has to work 8 hours a day. Why is that so? That's what Chazal said. Chazal said that don't fool yourself into thinking that if you're not going to learn Torah, you're going to relax. Because a man by nature cannot relax. There's no such thing. Relaxation is for the dead. The person, if he's alive, he has to involve himself in something that he thinks, or that in his fantasy, he gives great importance to. Whatever it might be, he can be collecting stamps. But he's collecting stamps, you think that he's involved in something he enjoys. No, he's not involved in something he enjoys. He has set up an institution that he considers to be very important, collecting stamps. Suddenly stamps become the most important thing in the world. And now the man has to go around trying to find out where this stamp and that stamp, get books and stamp and read, go down to the store and see if he has this stamp, doesn't have that. It's a complete, the man is involved in the service and in work, but there's only one difference. The work that he has set up for himself has no importance. Only his fantasy has importance, but he's working just as hard, you see? He is working. That's what the Rambam says. He says, if you don't spend your time in Chochmah, which is the real important thing, and you feel that you're going to relax, you're going to take it easy, no, you're making a mistake. He says, because yesh devarim harbe, there are many things, hamavatlim, v'yitztarcho, and they'll be necessary, l'mishim esasik v'yam. Because shalot esasik v'tari, don't study Torah, yet ridcho azman bechmet v'amara. That you're going to be, that's ridcho azman, you're going to be a torah. The word torah means, a person who's torah means, tirda means, he's burdened. You're going to be burdened with the nonsensical drives, because you're not going to be able to avoid. Why? Because it's the same thing like the beginning of the memory. Why is that so? Because a man's nature is such that he has to attach importance to what he's doing because of his ego need for satisfaction and thinking that he's some type of a person, that he has some kind of a worth and some kind of a value and some kind of an esteem. So he has to find it. So he's going to look for crazy areas where he's going to attach some importance to them. And this is going to be the thing that he's going to work for, he's going to slave for, and he's going to be suffering and working, not relaxing. It is impossible for a person to avoid this. That's what the memory says. Why? Because of the same thing as before. Because of the human ego. The human ego cannot be satisfied in just doing nothing. It can't, because then he's worthless. Ah, you'll ask me, what about a playboy? A playboy is one who is the expert at wasting time? No, the answer is because he takes tremendous pride in being a playboy. That is his thing. And he goes out of his way to make sure that everything he does gives the appearance that he's a great playboy. Otherwise, he's nothing. You see? He's inescapable. The only one that can escape this is a person who is psychologically deranged. Otherwise, it's impossible. It leads to totally depressed, and he'll kill himself. Rather than anything. Because they have to think of something, so they always think that there's the retirement fantasy, retirement fantasy. Yeah, either they go crazy, or else the happy ones are the ones that, like for instance, I happen to know a guy that retired. He was a fireman. He retired at the age of 50, and he doesn't work anymore. But the truth of the matter is, he doesn't look that much happier than he did before. But now, like, he's into shooting bows and arrows, so he spends 8 hours a day shooting arrows. Okay, in order to get into a contest that he could be, the only problem is he's a little bit older, so he can never really be top. But he's in the top 10, and he's working very hard. Let me tell you, he's working very hard. He's a hard worker. It's impossible to escape. Impossible. Then it says, the enjoyment that there is in relaxing is a momentary one. At the moment where the person thinks they're escaping the pain, that is the only thing. But escaping of pain, a person can't live his whole life on escaping pain. Escaping pain is a very short duration. That's why people don't take too long vacations. It's after the first day or two when they've escaped the pain. Now what am I going to do? See? So enjoying an escape is certainly not a positive enjoyment. At best, it's like a person that was, you take a person, tie him up in a room where he can't move, who enjoy the first hour when he can walk around. If that's the kind of enjoyment a person wants out of life, fine. But that certainly is not considered a pleasurable life per se. It's only the removal of pain. But most people's lives are gone that way. As a matter of fact, I think Socrates already made this point. But Socrates says that most people's lives is the life of itching powder. Itching powder. You can tell an example. Itching powder. The enjoyment of the scratching the itch, because which removes the pain of the itching. And that's most people's lives. I recognize it. Aristotle says no such relaxation. Relaxation is nonsense. Because relaxation means, if a person can't relax per se, relaxation means that you're not doing something. It's not an activity, relaxation. The absence of an activity which you're weary of, but it's not really a positive pleasure. Okay? It says, V'im omalto b'divrei Torah, he says, yesh socha ha-be'litala. So there's a great reward for you to receive. What it means is like this. What it means is that, on the contrary, that if you don't learn Torah, so then you're going to take something, you're going to have to take something that's nonsensical and be a slave to it, which means that you're going to be in a total life of pain. On the contrary, Torah, which a person feels is difficult to do, if you do overcome that initial barrier, the initial difficulty, if you overcome difficulty in sitting down to the Gemara, and you get involved in the thoughts and the ideas, there's Socha Harbe. Socha Harbe means the enjoyment. The world of enjoyment that opens up is a world of positive Socha, a pure world of positive enjoyment. You can overcome the difficulty and the fantasy, the barrier. Then when you, that's what it means, Socha Tov. Socha is Socha Harbe. It means that is the area, that is the only area in life, the only experience of life, which we can only describe it in one way. Socher Harbe. Socher means a positive good, and the quantity is great. That is the that's the experience of learning. First, it looks difficult, but if the person overcomes it, it's Socher Harbe. Socher Harbe means an unbelievable enjoyment that he never expected and that his fantasies never were attached to. It's an amazing phenomenon. It's an amazing phenomenon. Why? Because even a person feels, the mistake a person makes is that he feels that if by following his feelings he's going to be doing the right thing. He's going to be satisfying himself. So the feelings at first are attached to the instinctual, to the physical desires. But if he could break away from those physical desires and involve himself in chokhmah, if he could do that, he will experience a pleasure, an enjoyment that he never even felt he's going to have in that situation. You see, that's the Socher Harbe. Enjoyment is so great, and there wasn't even a desire for it. You see, he didn't even feel pulled towards it in order to attain the desire. So therefore, the reward is one that's not based upon pain. You know, every pleasure a person has is based upon, is dependent upon pain. Because if a person, for instance, is hungry and enjoys eating, he only enjoys the eating as long as the hunger continues. You see, once the hunger stops, he can't eat anymore. In the country, it gets painful. So every pleasure has an attending pain. And when the pain vanishes, the pleasure vanishes. Whereas with chachma, it's exactly the opposite. With chachma, there is a pain to begin with in order to get involved in the chachma. But once he gets involved in the chachma, the enjoyment opens up before him, is so great, and it's not dependent upon any pain. On the contrary, it's socher and it's harbe. Harbe means far greater than the person has ever imagined. That's what harbe means, much. What does it mean, much? Usually the enjoyments of life are very few, people say. They complain. They say the enjoyments of life are few. Why are they few? They're few because of the person's expectations. The expectation is great and the actual enjoyment is small. And by the way, there's another point also intrinsic in the memory, which is that the person that's involved in chachma is free from all the other nonsensical involvements and the self-inflicted slavery that most people are involved in. Why? Because he sees the real. This is the only thing that has real value. So therefore, he is not under the compulsion of working for those other things because he recognizes that they're worthless. So he's a free individual. Person, a human being, is in a normal state of mind where his psychological equilibrium is balanced is only when he's involved in chachma. When he's not involved in chachma, he's a distorted being. An animal doesn't have to be involved in chachma to be in a normal state, because an animal's energies are created for exactly what it has to do, and there's nothing more. A man has a surplus of psychic energy. This surplus of psychic energy, if it isn't involved in chachma, goes into areas which cause a person's psyche to be drawn and pulled and bent out of shape. So the only time a person has a normal psyche is really when he's involved in it. When he's wasting time. Does anybody have any idea where the critical difference are going on? If it's at hand, okay. If not, we'll skip it.
Yes. Oh, if you can get it, you'll do it. Okay. It's a nice, difficult thing. Many other gifts are beautiful muscles. How does it really, what does it really mean? What is it, how do you apply it? It doesn't seem to be applicable, because first of all, I mean, right? Anybody have any possibilities? Tough one. It's tougher than that. Nice muscle. Very nice muscle. But what was the application? What was the application? Yes. Greater level of stuff. Yeah. It's true. It's a greater level of God, that's for sure. Yeah.
The
white
and the
What is there, Roosevelt? Tough one, huh? You said it's tough. Neither Gdolim is, right? Yeah. Let me have a finish. Get a finish away, yeah. What was it? Right. By Avraham Avinu. Okay, it's a Malach Hashem. It's just the opposite. He says like this. Rashi says, really, if the children follow the ways of their parents, to show some mice have a same be damned. So then it says, talking about al b'nei vanim, al shileshim v'arubayim, dor revi. So if the person is evil, so then God punishes him for four generations. Nimta mida tova muruba al midas puronius achas l'chamesh meos. It's 1/500 of the mida tova. Plus mida tova is 2,000, and this is 4. You see. Shemida tovu omei notzaches l'alofin. So it's 5, the schar is 500 times the 500 times the punishment. It's an interesting chazal. But Ben Yon is basically saying something similar, as what Ben Yon is saying. So what does it mean? What is the idea? I mean, it sounds funny. 500 times more. It sounds also unjust. Basically, it's unjust, because justice would dictate that the owner should be, should be in the same manner. It's not justice. So what is it? Tradus in Tres Kriya. That's why we read the Kriya today in the Yamatinus. To remember the owner should know, but the Chazde Hashem. The Yamatinus is Hashem Hashem Kar Rachel Lachanam. To show the comparison. So what is the Pshat? What it means is that the way man is created, the way God created man, man has a physical being, physical nature, but he also has a metaphysical part to him, metaphysical part of his soul. The physical and the metaphysical are two different realms. And the physical, by its very definition, is inherently limited. It's inherently limited. Now, when a person receives an onesh, you see, an onesh There's two concepts in an onesh. The basic concept of an onesh is, insofar as the physical pain that he receives, physical pain, suffering that takes place, that he receives in this world. What it means is like this. It means that the good that he could receive is incomparable to the evil. Because the evil, even in the worst possible case, is inherently limited because of the fact that it simply merely is a result of the physical. The physical inherently is limited. So the worst that could happen is that he suffers a physical loss. But a physical loss, by definition, is limited. Whereas the good, which is the soul, which is metaphysical, is something which is endless in comparison to the good, you see. So therefore, what it means like this. It means to say, it's not an exact measurement, 1 in 500. 1 in 500 means it's many, many, many times. It's a mushroom. What it means is that the good that a person can receive by far has to outweigh the evil that it could ever receive because of the nature of the individual. Because the nature of man is such that the worst physical catastrophe that can occur is still limited to the physical. But the nature of the soul, the nature of the metaphysical part of man, the part of man that is beyond the his mere body, you see, is something which partakes of the eternal. Part of man, the essential self, can never receive any onus. There's only one onus that the essential self can receive. Removal. Exactly. Just absentia. He's absented from the good. That's the only ownership he receives. As a matter of fact, the Rambam. I'm not going to. You have a Rambam here. Rambam says like this. The Rambam is in Perek Ches. Let us chew. Hatova atzfuno tzadikim yichaya olam haba. The good that is kept for the tzadikim, that is preserved for the tzaddikim, is the life of the afterlife. V'yachayim shein mavasimayim. That's a life that death doesn't apply to it, because it's a different, it's the existence of the part of man that perceives chachma, which death, the occurrence of death, doesn't apply to that element of man. V'atova she'eni moro. It's the only pure good, unadulterated good. Hu shekos v'atova, l'man yitav l'chol v'arach t'yomim. It's referring to a different part of man, the metaphysical part of man. What is the reward of the righteous? This is the good for the tzaddikim, that they attain this good. And the payment for the wicked is shelo yizku l'chayim el. That they won't receive this good. Ela yichrasu v'yamuzu. They'll simply die. Okay. To the average Russia, it doesn't sound too bad. It's not really what he's afraid of. But the fact is, in reality, that is the worst tragedy. What? Something the Ramban already was tofes on this Ramban. There's a big Ramban on this. I'm not going to go into a whole argument about Gehenna. About Gehenna. I'm not going to go into the argument. I mean, it's a big machlokas, and I can't get involved in such machlokas. But what I'm trying to say is like this. I think on one count, they'll all agree, and that is that the good is incomparable to the bad, to that which we consider bad, because the bad at worst can only affect the physical, and the physical, by its definition, is limited. Limited. A person can't have more than 70 or 80 years of torture. That's it. It's a limited existence. But the Chai Olam Abba, in contradistinction to that, Chai Olam Abba is Nitzchi. And it's not just a matter of the amount of time. It's a matter of the nature of the substance. The nature of the substance of the body is a different nature. So the nature of the substance of the guf can't possibly be involved in what the good part of man is. Zelu mazef. If you compare them, they're incomparable. Two different realms. So that's what I think the pasuk means. That when the pasuk says that with regard to the midas hatova of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is gives us a mashal 500 times more than the Midas Peronius. Because Midas Peronius is only limited. See? It's only limited. So there we say that it's the Midas HaKadosh Baruch Hu is four doros. That's a limit. The Rambam explains why it's four doros. Four doros, the Rambam says, because that's the most that a person could see of his offspring during his lifetime. Usually that's the most a person can say. It's four doros. I mean, it's great grandchildren. In other words, like this. That's what it means, like this. That's why what I'm saying is the chesed Hashem. My question was, chesed is very nice, but chesed has to be just. Where's the justice? The chesed, where's the justice? The answer is like this. The answer is that the chesed Hashem is expressed not in the way he meters out reward or punishment. The Chesed Hashem is expressed in the way he created man, in his very creation of man, that God created a Bria which is capable of unbelievable level of good and a limited level of evil. That's the nature of the Bria. That's the Chesed Hashem. The Chesed Hashem is in the way he created man. In the way he made the human being, the way he constructed the human being, he created a being that is capable of unbelievable good and a limited amount of good. You see? That's the Chesed Hashem. So it's not a matter of injustice. It's a natural phenomena according to the nature of a person. That's what I think he means like this. That's what Benyon means. Benyon means he gives a mashal of the melech. But the mashal's like this. When it comes to midas peronios, when it comes to an onesh, that a person receives a bittul Torah, of course, is the worst of error, because Talmud Torah is the greatest mitzvah. Bittul Torah is the worst of error in the sense that he's losing the greatest good. It doesn't mean it's the biggest avera in terms of the halachic system. But in terms of the halachic system, Shul Shabbos Avodah Zarah is the worst of error. But the bittul Torah means the greatest loss he receives is through bittul Torah. Even a greater loss than he would receive through not putting on tefillin, not doing other mitzvahs. Abstention from Torah is the greatest loss a person, the greatest abstention of the good, the greatest loss that he could lose is through bittul Torah. So what it means is like this. So what it means is that that's the mashal. It means like this. It means if a person is not a good person, if he's mevatel Torah, so then the onus you will receive is through the shluchim. What are the shluchim? The shluchim means the physical means that exist in the world. That's the shluchim. Physical means. But if a person learns Torah, so his reward is a direct reward of God, directly related to the melech. Why? Because in studying Torah, what happens in studying Torah? In studying Torah, he relates to God metaphysically. There's an actual relationship between him and God. Talmud Torah isn't just a mitzvah. Talmud Torah means that's Avodah Shebelev. It means when a person is studying Torah, he's relating to God. He's actually relating to the Borei Olam. So Rabbi Rosenthal mentioned recently that the Rav quoted from the Rambam, Kumi Roni Balayla. That in Talmud Torah, it's not just the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. Like the Rav one time said, the expression was, it's a rendezvous with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It means it's a person sitting and learning the Gemara, and while he's learning the Gemara, he's actually relating to the Borei Olam, to the ideas of God. It's an inherent relationship. So that's what he means. He means in the area of the good, you are with the melech. You are with when a person does an aver and receives an onesh. It's not from the melech. It's not from the melech because of the fact that he has no relationship to the melech when he's doing an aver. So then God sends his shiluchim to give a person an onesh. By the way, he only gives a person an onesh if the person is worthy of an onesh. An onesh is a wonderful thing. If a person knows that he received an onesh from God, it's a wonderful thing. It means to say that God is concerned about his well-being, and he gives him an onesh in order to set him on the right track. But the onesh, he's not relating to the melech directly, because it's only to his physical being. But in the good, in the schar is a direct relationship with the Borei Olam. And the direct relationship with the Borei Olam is partaking of the greatest good that is actually infinite. That's the mashmah. That's the way I understand the mashmah ben yam. Is this the reward that it relates to God? Yeah. What it means is, when a person relates to God, so the reward is on several levels. First of all, as we explained, that Hashgachas Hashem is not a nes. Hashgachas Hashem, the fact that a person who is on a high level, a person that relates to God, the fact that he is, for instance, protected from certain physical harm, so that is not a nes. That is not a nes. That's a part of our munah, that the world, the universe, is created in a way that when a person relates to God, his relationship with God brings him to a higher sphere, above the sphere of the physical law. So that's why he's protected from the physical law that can harm him. You see? But that is not an ace. That's a natural thing. It's a natural thing. The phenomenon of Hashgacha is natural because it means that the person, and the Rambam goes out of his way in the Moen of Uchim, I think, to bring for us that idea. That the whole idea of the Hashgachas Hashem, and the protection, the physical protection, of course most people are concerned about the physical protection, but the Rambam goes out of his way, the Rambam knows that, and the Moen goes out of his way to explain that the physical protection that the person receives is a natural result of being in line with Hashgachas Hashem. He's beyond the physical causes. So since he's beyond the physical causes, the physical doesn't affect him anymore. Okay? So that's one. That's one good. But the state of relating to God itself is the highest good in man. Not only as far as physically, but psychologically and metaphysically also. It's a good that we can't even describe. I mean, it's a good that description defies description, because any description you're going to give is going to be a description based upon the physical. You see, so the reward is a different kind of a reward. It's not like somebody received an accolade or some kind of a particular physical good. It's a good. It's an inherent good. The state is an inherent good. That's what I've been learning. That's what I mean. He is with the melech. He's with the melech. It's a different phenomenon. There are no restrictions with the melech. But the melech, the good, is the ultimate good. And the highest good that man is capable of, he's receiving. That's Talmud Torah. If he's mevatel Talmud Torah, however, the onesh that he receives is limited, because it's not through, he's unrelated to God. It's a limited onesh. That's meruba. Midah tova midas peronius, but it's the chesed Hashem. When he says it's the chesed Hashem, he means the chesed Hashem in the way that he created man. He created man in such a way that he's capable of the ultimate good, and harm is only really a small one. That's basically what I'm being honest. And so far as the pasuk is concerned, that notzah chesed la'alafim. I'm saying like this. I'm saying insofar as the evil is concerned, there we say that it's four generations. That's limited. Because the Rambam explains, the most a person receives in his lifetime, four generations. You see, that's what the Rambam explains. And which means to say that since, that's precisely what we're saying, since it's a physical kind of onesh, so it's limited to a person's physical life. And in his physical life, the most he could see of his children is four generations. So therefore it has to be inherently limited, because it's tied to his physical nature. But notzah chesed la'alafim implies. I'm saying notzah chesed la'alafim is perpetuity. That's what it means. It means forever. Notzah chesed la'alafim. Exactly. Not that it's 2,000 generations, and after then 2,001 is going to stop. I don't think that's the pasuk. And then the pasuk is just a mashal. It's showing you no tzachas alalafim, but this is only the physical world before generations. That's dachka. But the chazal are using it as a mashal. They say alafim is 500 times more. It doesn't mean exactly 500 times more. It's impossible to compare. But it's a mashal. 500 means it's impossible to compare. That's what I'm learning from. There is a Rambam that says that there's a special category of Rishei Olam. Rishei Olam means people that are incredibly evil, like you mentioned. That are Nidunim La'olam, that are Nidunim La'olam. There's a chazal like that. And the Ramban criticizes this Rambam because he says, the Rambam seems to say that the worst that could happen is that you don't get the good. So the Ramban was very upset about it, because the Chazal that says that Rishei Olam are Nidunim La'olam, that they suffer an eternal torment, you see. And the Ramban says, but the Rambam does bring that down later. He does bring down, the Rambam does have, he says, Nidunim, that's a separate category. That's a separate category of Rishei Olam. Rishei Olam apparently is a separate category. That's the way the Ramban learns. But it means Rishei Olam, people that are incredibly evil, there isn't eternal onus. They suffer eternal torment. There's a Rambam like that in Ramban says it too. But generally, not Rishei Olam, generally speaking, the bed that that a person will receive is simply he didn't get the good. He didn't receive the good. But it's a good point you made. The Rambam speaks about the people like you mentioned, the ones that are incredibly evil. He says like this, Ve'eluhein she'en le'mechel golem abor ela nechrosim, it's in Perek Gimel Lachavav, nechrosim va'ovdin v'nidunin al godel rishom v'chatosim la'olam u'la'olmei olamim. That's what Rambam says. So you see, that's different. That's a different thing. Well, Rambam understood the Rambam, that it means to say that these people, there are certain people, he mentions the people, Aminim, Apikorsim, Kofim, Atarkim, Teresim, Asim, Biazagol, Mordim, Achtia, Rabim, Porshim, Midak, Itzibor, Osaveres, Biad, Roma, Bifahesia. It means they're horrible, horribly evil, evil people. Shofchei Domim, yeah. Takes in a lot of people. Baalei Lashon Hara. Baalei Lashon Hara is one of them. Moshe Chalasa. Yes. These are the ones that are incredible. These are Nidun Lo, but Baalei Lashon Hara means, Baalei Lashon Hara means there's a difference between a person who spoke Lashon Hara or a person who thrives on Lashon Hara. The difference. Baalei Lashon Hara means that's their essence. They're constantly involved in gossip and this. They're constantly, that's their essence. That's their essence. And then they're Nechrosim and Nidun Lo and all their long. That means that's their essence. With the other pshat, but there is a philosophical and psychological truism here, and there is a metaphysical truism as well. Both are true. Not that God could give the reward to somebody else, but he doesn't, like a melech. It doesn't mean that. It means the way God created man, the reward is always through the melech. That's part of his chesed, that he created a being that is of such a nature, and that he relates to that being through his hashgacha. That's his chesed. That's the chesed. We're jumping to Mishnah Beis. We'll come back and take it off later. Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua Omer, Yehi chavod talmidcha chovev alacha kishalach. That the honor of the Talmud, will like this one. The honor of your Talmud should be as dear to you as your own cover. All right, interesting. Uchavod chavercha, and the honor of your friend, your chaver, that's on the same level as you, should be kemor rabba, just like the fear of your rebbe. Umor rabba, and the fear of your rebbe should be Kemor HaShemayim, like the fear of God. Okay. It sounds like you just upped them all one a year, okay? Other points over here. So Benny Hernandez says, he says like this. He says, makes one point, like this. He says, you shouldn't think, by the way, he had a different gear cell here, Benny Hernandez. Benny Hernandez's gear cell was, Yehi chavod chavercha, I mean, the Yehi chavod talmidcha, chav v'lecha kishalach. So Rabbeinu Yonah says that, just a second, this one's missing the blue there. He had a different gist. He says, Yehi chavod talmidcha, chav v'lecha kichvod chavercha. That's what he says. Not the way we have. We have, Yehi chavod talmidcha, chav v'lecha kishalach. That the honor that you accord your Talmud should be taken just as seriously as the honor as your own honor, the way you take your own honor. That's the way our guess. But he says no. He says Yehi chavod talmidcha chav v'lecha kichavod chavercha. That the covet of your Talmud should be just like the covet of your chaver. Okay. Then the covet of your chaver should be like the fear of your rebbe, and the fear of your rebbe should be like Maror Shamayim. So first of all, he has one term. He says like this. He says, Ratzalama kol echad kifi kvodo hayadua, shiroi lasos l'chavo l'talmud. He says it doesn't mean to say that you should give as much kavod to your Talmud as you give to your chaver. And you should treat your chaver like you treat your Rebbe. And you should treat your Rebbe like you treat God, like you act towards God. No. Avaleina Omer, he says that doesn't mean that. He says each one should be in its proper measure. Avaleina ma'omer sheyichabe l'talmido kamo l'chavero. He says, kiena b'din? That's absurd. Ela kamo she'encho rashoi l'groa l'chavercho mikvodo. Just like you are not permitted to diminish from your chaver's kovid, kach ein l'cho rashus, lifchos mea kovid aroi l'talmidcho. So you have no right to diminish from the kovid that's befit your Talmud. Yes. You give your Talmud should be the correct amount that he deserves. But the only thing is, he says you must be as cautious with it as you are cautious with the cover that you give your chaver. And then the cover that you give your chaver, you must be as cautious with as the cover that you give your rebbe. And the cover and the mora that you give your rebbe. And the mora that you give your rebbe, you should be as cautious with as mora shamayim. Okay? Yeah. It means it should be a serious deal. A serious deal. A serious deal. Okay. Or for your Rebbe is because that's based upon it partakes of Kavod Shamayim. It's not for him personally, because he partakes of Kavod Shamayim. You see? Why? Because Al ki yilamdo Torah v'liras Hashem alakar. Because the Rebbe teaches him all of God. So the relationship between that being who relates you to the awe of the Creator must itself partake of awe. You see? V'o'e v'satora, o'e v'sachachomim, v'yore es devar Hashem, u'lemelameid oso yiras shamayim v'lelechas b'derach hatova. Al kei nema mora rabach. Language not too clear, but that's basically the idea. V'hizkir kovod b'talmud u'b'chover, kei nechayev b'mora. But a talmud and a chover, there's no reason to have awe for a chover or for a talmud. Because they are not involved. Awe is only from God. For God, a man has awe. For a Rebbe, the reason why he has awe is because the Rebbe is the one that teaches him awe of God. So since he reflects, he's involved in that, he's involved in Mora Shamayim, so therefore the relationship to him must be one of awe. You see? The Hizkir Kvar Kav B'Talmud. Nimtzas Lomeid, so he says, now what's the upshot of the whole memory? Ki kovo talmidcho tzorach shiye choviv beinecho kemor shemayim hamachuyiv alecho ve'ein lecho levatu leze kemo leze. So the upshot is, if you follow logically, it's going to come out like this, that the Talmud is just like, go right away, you jump from the first one to the end, that the covet of the Talmud is going to be equal to mor shemayim shekulam tolo ze al ze vimkein arbo sam b'madrega achasim. If that's the case, they're all the soldiers. If this is like A is like B, B is like C, so it comes out that the A is like E. He says like this: V'chein im kein abosim madreig achasim hakovod l'fi kivodon v'amora l'fi moron. Okay. So what's the interpretation of the statement? What's the interpretation? So what's the statement? So on the first of all, yeah. But why didn't he just say straight? Yehi kovod talmidcha. Tomorrow, all he can say, he covered chavercha, and mora rabach tomorrow shemayim, and that's it. Why did he have to go step by step? Covered talmidcha, covered chavercha, tomorrow rabach, mora rabach tomorrow shemayim. Why do you have to make this? Why do you have to make this whole progression? And then we say that the first term is equal to the last term. It's a logical syllogism. But why do you have to have this whole progression? Why don't you just group them all together and say the covet of your Talmud and the covet of your Chaver and the Mora of your Rebbe should all be like Mora Shemayim, and that's it. It's an equality. That's it. What's the answer? What is the final statement Rabbeinu Yonah explains? Like this. He says, "In Cain are Bosom the Madrega Achasan," Rabbeinu Yonah says. They're all on one level. Hakovod l'fi kavodon v'amora l'fi moron. But they're all on the same level. What does it mean to say? It means like this. It means that there's two ways that a person acts when it comes to a situation of bein adam l'chavera. The way a person usually acts, the usual manner that a person sets out for himself whenever it comes to a situation of bein adam l'chavera is based upon his emotions, because that's the area where a person puts on film. It's a halachic phenomenon. But a person is engaging in a discussion with his friend, he does not view it as a halachic phenomenon. It's simply a social phenomenon. So therefore, it comes out like this: that the person usually he feels emotionally a certain way towards his father. His father receives a respect. It's an emotional feeling. He has a feeling. A Talmud, he has a different feeling for. He doesn't have the same respect for a Talmud as he has for a Chaver, because it wouldn't be rational. But he relates to him naturally in a different way. There's a certain natural way that he relates to a Talmud. There's a certain natural way that a person relates to a Rebbe. He has a different niche in his mind. Socially, he doesn't relate to a Rebbe in the same way. It wouldn't be normal for a person to relate to a Rebbe and to a Chaver and a Talmud in the same way. If you did, there's something wrong with him psychologically. But a normal person has different psychological niches for different people, and that's the way he relates to them. So what Chazal is saying is like this: that a person should not, in carrying out his relationship between himself, his Talmud, his Chaver, and his Rebbe, it should not be done on a psychological plane. See? The way a person usually does. Because when it's done on a psychological plane, what happens is like this. It's not just that the Talmud is accorded less kavod, but kavod for the Talmud becomes less important than kavod for the Chaver. You see? That's the result of the psychological. The result of the psychological is that kavod for a chaver is less important than kavod for a rav. You see? That's what Chazal say. Chazal are telling us that approach is wrong. While it's true that each one deserves a different modicum of kavod, and there's also a qualitative difference between yirah in some of his relations, but basically a person should realize that it should all be equivalent to what? To Kvod Shemayim, which means to say that the person, when he relates to every individual, he must understand that he's not giving cover to a Talmud because of the personality of the Talmud. That's a natural psychological phenomenon. But the Talmud is a creation of God. That there's a metaphysical entity that he's relating to in the Talmud. And therefore, covered for a Talmud and covered for a Chava And cover for a Rebbe must be viewed as part of the whole system, the whole halachic system, which demands that a person relates properly to each individual according to his framework. And this is all halacha that God gave us. It's all Kvod Shamayim, basically. It's all Kvod Shamayim. The difference in the amounts of kavod is only because that's rationally determined. But the importance of the kavod, is the same. A person who, therefore, it means like this, that when a person relates to his Talmud, so he can't think to himself, he's just a Talmud. He'd feel worse if he related inappropriately to his Rebbe than to his Talmud. He's a Talmud, Chavar's not so important. That's wrong. That's a person who functions purely on a psychological level, on an emotional level. That is not a person that's functioning on a high level. A person that functions on the true level has to have the concept of what his metaphysical relationship. In other words, there's a metaphysical concept. Kavod for Talmud is dictated by the halacha. It's halacha. It's just the same halacha as kavod for a chavar. There's no difference. The same halacha which dictates that you give kavod to a rebbe. Same halacha which dictates a person has a proper relationship with a Kadosh Baruch Hu. You can't differentiate. It means to say that a person's actions, the way he acts towards another human being, should not be based upon his feelings alone. He can't base it on his feelings. When he does, he's not a rational person. He's just acting emotionally. But when a person relates to another individual, he should remember that this is all the way God ordered the world, and it's all a part of the proper order in terms of expressing the kavod of an individual. It's a different, it means he's short, he has to be in a different wavelength. Different wavelength. A regular person looks at a chavar as just a friend, so he's nice to him because it's appropriate. But a Talmud Chacham looks at a chavar as a tzalam alokim. He has a certain chiv of kavod to this individual that's a tzalam alokim. And a Talmud is the same thing. But of course the difference is only because rationally they're not on the same, they don't demand the same type of activity. But in terms of the importance of the action, there is no difference, basically. That's the statement of the member, according to Rabbeinu Yonah.
Yeah.
Right. Because chavar means, it means a real chavar, it means chavar l'deya. Chavar l'deya. It means it's chavrusa. It's chavrusa. Not just a chavrusa money. Chavrusa money is more than chavrusa money. It's a chavrusa in terms of the person also. It's a chavar l'deya. It means it's the highest level of chavar. It means he discusses things with him. He's his friend, what he's going to do. He discusses if it's right, if it's wrong. Everything he does, he's involved with him. It's a chavar l'deya. So a chavar l'deya, it's not just selling all the time. A chavar demands a certain amount of chavar because there's a mutuality, a sharing of Torah. There's a sharing of Torah. So the sharing of Torah demands that the individual with whom I share this precious entity deserves a certain chavar. So the chavar deserves chavar because it's basically it's Kavod Shamayim. He's involved in Kavod Shamayim. And the same thing with the Talmud. The Rambam has it in Kishem Sheha Talmidim Chayovim B'Kavod Rav, just like a Talmud is Chayov and Kavod Rav, Kach Rav Tzorach L'Chaber Es Talmidim L'Kavod. He says, Kishem, the same thing. Isn't it Kishem? It sounds funny. No, I mean, you can't compare the two. A Talmud to a Rebbe is Mora. It's actually a Sashem L'Kavod Pira. But a Rebbe to Talmud is not the same thing. But he says, Kishem. What does it mean, Kishem? That's from this Mishnah. Kishem means not in terms of the amount or in the terms of the quality of the kavod, because there's more and there's not more, and here it's less and here's more. But in terms of the chiyuv is the same thing. Kacha rav tzorach l'chaber es talmid avol l'karvan. Kacha amru chachamim. Yehi kvod talmid chachov alecha kishalach. See, the Rambam has a different version. Chachov alecha kishalach, not chachov alecha kichaverecha. V'tzorach odom nizor b'talmido v'lo ohavam shehim abonim hamahanim l'olam hazeh l'olam abah. He says, that's what Ram says. The person is mechuyev, these are individuals that are benefit in this world and the next world. So it means that that the kavod is on an objective plane, an objective recognition of what the Talmud is. And that's what Ram goes on. He says that Talmidim Mosifim Chokhmah Saravim Achivim Libo Omer Chachomim Habe Chokhmah Lamalikim Rabosai V'yesh Mechavare Timi Yesh Mikulam. וכשם שעץ קוטן מדליק את הגודל, כך תלמיד קוטן מחדד הרב, עד שיוצא ממנו בשאלות של חוכמה מפוארה. So really, the Talmud, the learning Torah, that's what we go later in the Mishnah also. Learning Torah is not a narcissistic endeavor. A person, it's impossible for a person to feel that he can learn himself, he knows how to learn, spend a lot. He'll never be able to really reach a true height of Chochmah unless he has the Talmudim that question him, and through questioning, it's Markev Daita. So the Talmud to a Rav is the idea of having covered for the Talmud is based upon the concept that he shares in his Torah, and also he's the one that's the Mahana for the whole world, for the Mazarim Rabbah. That's also involved. Of course, that's involved as well. That's involved. Of course, that's involved as well. But that's the second halacha. The first halacha is, he doesn't mention it in the first halacha. The first halacha he just says, V'tzorachad al-Nizar b'talmid of al-Avam, k'shehim ha-bonim ha-mahanim lo mazalam rabah. That's what he says. That's what Ram says. So that's from the metaphysical point. Metaphysical point. You refrain, what? Yeah. It's on the objective level. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It's on the objective level. Talmud is the cover for Talmud is on an objective plane, but not just for Talmud. It's an interesting thing. In Yadus, every relationship is a person. That's why Chazal differentiate between a person that's a Talmud Chacham and a person that's a part of the Hamon Am, because the Hamon Am only relate to each other socially at best. Even when things are good, it's only on an emotional level. Nothing more than an emotional level. But Yadus demands that a person relates to other people on an objective level, on a halachic level. A different kind of halachic and metaphysical level, a different phenomenon, different kind of relationship altogether. That's the number. It's just thought out halachic relationship. That's what Chazal says. There's a difference, however, if I say like a Beni Yonah's view, so which is, Yi kavod talmidcha chavo lecha ki kavod chavercha. And kavod chavercha kamoru rabach kamoru shemayim, that's one way to learn the Mishnah. But the other way is you cover Talmud Chachavah Lachik Kishaloch. That's where the Rambam learns. Okay? What's the difference really which way? Whether I say it's Kishaloch or if I say that it's or if I say it's Kichavercha. You see? What's the difference? According to Rabbeinu Yonah, I mean, I'm just talking it out now. Just I'm thinking out loud. According to Rabbeinu Yonah, it's like this. According to Rabbeinu Yonah, it's really, this is like a chavar is like a Rebbe is like God. So it comes out that they're all the same. But he just said, why does he go step by step? That was the question. So why does he just say immediately that it's all like Kavod Shemayim? Well, what's the answer? The answer is because we'd say immediately, you'd have no way to relate to it. You'd have no way to relate to it. So therefore, he states it on an emotional plane, which means like this: when you think of Kavod of your Talmud, you should realize, you should remove it from the emotional standard of Kavod for Talmud. How do you do that? If you realize, well, what if it was a Chavah? Would I treat a Chavah like that? Would I be as careless with the Kavod of a Chavah? You see? So therefore, in other words, what the Mishnah is telling you is that you have to treat it. You can't, in other words, a person has to have a means of functioning. Means of functioning. So a person can't say, he's talking to Talmud and say, would I act this way if it was a matter of culture in Miami? It doesn't make any sense. Anyway. So, but from a Talmud to a Chavar, he can envision such a thing. So look, there's only a Talmud, but would I treat it my father that way? No. So you cover Talmud for the more Chavarcha. You see? In other words, the Mishnah is showing you via emotions, the Mishnah is really showing you how to act this way. In other words, there's two things here. A person is an emotional being. He has to correct himself, but he can't correct himself necessarily by just doing the most perfect act. It's impossible. How does he get there? So the Mishnah is giving you a means to get there. But why is it? But according to him, it's like this. Kavod Talmud is equal to Chavah. And then you see, logically, Chavah is equal to Rav, and Rav is equal to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So once you get finished with the whole progression, it comes out that it's all the same. Yeah, that's true. That's true. In reality, that's true. But on an emotional level, a person simply has to have a way of relating. So therefore, Chazal tell you, this is what you should do. Yehi kavod talmid chorku kavod chavercha. The person, when he sees his talmid, he should think, this is not really, I have to treat this person like my chaver. Then already he's removed from the emotion of the talmid. What you want to do is you want to remove him from that emotional state that he naturally relates to his talmid, as insignificant. So you say, just a second, how did you choose his chaver? Once you do that, then he realizes, and why? Because really it's all the same. It's all the same chiyuv. You see? That's the nature. The Mishnah not only teaches you the idea, but it shows you the method of perfecting yourself. Otherwise, you can tell a person very nice. You'd be like a Kodesh Baruch. Yeah, but he can't do it. Looks at his Talmud. Talmud is not there to cover the Shemayim. But from Talmud to Chavar is a good jump. There, that he could see. That a person, that makes sense to a person's, in a person's mind. So, and what does it do? The moment he treats his Talmud like his chaver, it removes him from the emotional, from that emotional niche. You see, there's an emotional niche between the way you treat a Talmud and the way, and a different niche for a chaver. So if you remove the Talmud from his niche, then already you're out of the emotional relationship. Then the person realizes, yeah, why? Because it's coaching him. But in order to remove him from that emotional niche of Talmud, he must think of chaver, otherwise he can't remove himself. That's the nature. That's why it's a progression. That's why it's a progression. See? The progression is to remove him from the emotional relationship, but he has to do it through a certain, he has emotions, so he has to work with his emotions. So the emotions that he can work with is, what about, would I treat a chaver like that? No. So then the idea, the metaphysical idea, then he can relate to it. That's the pshat in the Mishnah. Because I'm engaged with all these individuals in Lumatora. It's not me telling them. These are people that I'm engaged in Lumatora with. So these are special individuals. Each one is a point around. Each one is a different expression. It's not a different. It's not a machlokas. No, they're both hold the same basic idea. But the question is, how do you remove yourself from the emotional relationship? So the point sounds like this: Ye kavod talmid chokishaloch. It means that your own kavod, you have a certain level of value. Talmid, his kavod you can expand. It's not so serious. So he said, no, you have to have the same feelings towards the Talmud's kavod as you have towards your own kavod. Now, kavod chavercha, you can't say kishaloch because it's already kishaloch. So kavod chavercha, you should introduce the concept of mora, a new concept. In other words, when it comes to Talmud, you should introduce the concept of your own, the value of your own cover. When it comes to your chaver, you should introduce another concept. What's the concept you should introduce? Mora. See, mora is a different kind of a feeling than cover. Because mora is something which a person recognizes is an external chiyuv. And awe, you still have to have a certain awe. Awe is a different type of a phenomenon. It's a different chiyuv altogether. So you should treat your chaver not just with a bederach cover, but the cover that you give him you should treat as if it was awe, as if it was mora. And mora rabach kimora shemayim. What does it mean? Awe is one thing, but mora shemayim is metaphysical awe. It's a different kind of a different concept of awe. So in Mora, so when a person relates to his Rav, he should not merely see Mora because he has Mora already. But what he should see is Mora Shemayim. You see, Kavod Shemayim. So in each one, he enters the Rambam, according to the Rambam's Pshat, in each individual case, he enters a different element. In the case of a Talmud, he enters the element of his own, of himself, the Chashivas of himself. In the case of a Chavar, he enters the element of all. In the case of a Rav, it's metaphysical law. It's a different. In each one, he tells you that you're mechuyev to bring in a different element in order to raise it out of the emotional plane. That's what a Rav means. Okay. No, it doesn't mean you have to have mora for your chavod, but it means you have to treat his chavod in the same way that you would treat Mora Rava. In the same way that you would treat Mora. You have to take from Mora the way you treat, you act towards Mora in a different way than towards Kavod. So you said, a different emotional relationship. When a person hears Mora, it's a different emotional relationship. Mora. So it's an interesting thing. What is interesting? Over here, the halacha really, the halacha parallels human emotions. Because the halacha, that's the nature of the halacha. The halacha is based upon how a person relates. So kavod and Mora, these are all natural things. But they become halacha, they became halacha. But when they become halacha, they have to be removed from the natural. And now they have to be treated with on a different level. So the element of Mora has a naturally different effect emotionally. If you treat your chavar's covered with the way you would treat Mora, that's a totally different phenomenon. By doing that, it removes it from the natural, from just the natural relationship. And then his actions become totally on our level. According to the Rambam, it's a each one is a qualitative injection of a different, injecting a totally different quality from the Rambam. According to Rabbeinu Yonah, it's simply one step higher. It's a quantitative. According to Rabbeinu Yonah, it's a quantitative injection. In each relationship, you go up one. Go up one. Talmud, Chava. Chava, Ra. You can always go up one. Your emotions let you go up one. According to Rabbeinu Yonah, you just go up one. According to the Rambam, the emphasis as it was on injecting a different emotion into the relationship. Injecting a specific emotion into the relationship. An emotion which is appropriate to the specific relationship. The Rambam was working on the side of your love for yourself and Mora Shemayim. Whereas the Rabbeinu Yonah was working on the level of Talmud, Chavar, Rav, and Kavod Shemayim.
The concept is that a person should not relate to individuals, whether it's his Talmud or whether it's his father, purely on an emotional basis. And the whole method was devised in order to teach a person how to remove himself from the emotional relationship. I would say this. I'd say that one of the things that Yahadus did was not simply to show what perfection is in terms of human relations, but really to revise the whole concept of human relations. In other words, to the world, the idea of human relations is based upon one's emotional feeling. And on the contrary, they believe that if anything besides the emotions is involved, that means that the relationship is deficient. And Yadus maintains just the opposite, that the emotional relationship alone is really weak and empty and unstable and is not an expression of the higher form of man. So that, for instance, the example, the way a Rebbe relates to a Talmud is a certain emotional relationship that a Rebbe has with a Talmud. But Yadus says no. That Yehi Kavo Talmidcha Chavo Lecha Kishalach, or Kavo Chavercha, which means to say that when a person relates to his Talmud, he has to relate to him on an intellectual basis, on a halachic basis. It means that, and this is not just true of the relationship between a Rebbe and a Talmud, but of course, as the Mishnah says, the relationship between a Chavar. So a Chavar, when you relate to a Chavar, the emotional relationship of a chavar, which is the relationship that most people look for, and most people feel confident and secure in, and they feel that this is the real relationship, yeah, this is not. That relationship is not. It's just, it's an empty relationship. On the contrary, it's a relationship that is one which is subject to destruction, because it's only on the hollow emotional level. And Yadus demands that when you see a chavar, that you relate to him in a halachic way. Kavod chavecha, kemor shamayim, kemor rabbah, which is eventually kemor shamayim. But it means to say that he's operating on a different principle. And this is so really in all human relations. That's one thing that Yadis did, which is completely different. Not only different from the world, but it's even different from the philosophers. Because no philosopher could ever work out such a system. It would be an absurdity. Without HaKadosh Baruch Hu giving us a halachic system, it would be impossible, nonsensical. People are just going to make up arbitrary things. And they cover the chavercha kamar rabbah. I mean, what are the parameters of mar rabbah? You see, that's what Sagan mentions. Sagan says the question was raised: why was it necessary to have matan Torah? Without matan Torah, we agree that the ideas of the Torah are true, and therefore, since the ideas of the Torah are true, so a very great chacham would be able to come to the conclusions on his own, like Avraham Avinu did. You see. Of course, those people are very rare, but nevertheless, it's possible. And the Rambam mentioned that there were certain Greek philosophers which came to the same conclusions on certain basic issues as Yadis. And it is possible for the human mind to come to those conclusions because, since they're rational, so if a person is a purely rational individual, he'll come to the same conclusion. But one thing would be impossible. This, which we're discussing over here, would be completely impossible. To have institutions, halachic institutions, where relationships are based upon halachic phenomena, this would be completely impossible. This would be absurd, because an individual would not be able to know what exactly is, how do you relate to a Rebbe? How do you know that a Rebbe is reflects the Shechina, and therefore he should be apportioned a certain type of demeanor? You would not be able to know this unless the halacha specifies. So this is something which only we, as people who have received the Torah Min HaShamayim, are capable of doing. And Yadus maintains that the essence of all our relationships can never be without an objective halacha quality. That is the true relationship. A relationship which the world looks for, which is an expression of just emotion, on the contrary, Yadus looks down on it. So therefore, I would say that this halacha is really an important halacha insofar as it revises something which we are all very closely involved in. I mean, a person is a social being. He's always involved in a social intercourse between his chaverim, talmidim, not only talmidim, but ben ishto as well. Man and his wife. Man and his wife, which to the world is supposed to be a natural emotional relationship, Yadis maintains necessary. But the relationship must be based upon an objective concept, an objective halachic concept. And that is the true enduring and perfected relationship. So that whenever a person relates to individuals, there always has to be, as an essence, always has to be the halachic element. If the halachic element is lacking, it is not relating with another. That's one of the big things that Yahadis did in terms of human relations. It changed the whole nature of human relations. And in this week's Sedra, really you find an expression of this. Because, first of all, it's interesting. It says, Yaakov Avinu, Vayikvu Bnei Yisrael Lamos, Vayikvu Lefnei Yosef. They told his son. He wanted his son to make sure that he's not interred in Egypt. So how would a person speak to his son? Call over his son and say, look, this is what I want you to do. I told him, your father, I'm asking you to do this, you have to do this. No, take a look at the person. Vayikol of Nel Yosef Vayamalo in no motzasi chen be'enecha. Sim lo yol fatachas yirecha. So he was mafayah from the shvua. First of all, he spoke to him in no motzasi chen be'enecha. What's his son? What's in no motzasi chen be'enecha? You see? Because the halacha is, he covered Tamilcha, covered Lacha Kishalach. So, in his relationship with Yosef, it wasn't just a relationship, a normal relationship, emotional relationship, or the world calls a normal emotional relationship between a father and son. There's never such a thing. It is always based upon a halachic recognition that you're dealing with a Tzelem Elokim, which is an objective entity, and therefore the relationship must be on that basis. So when he spoke to his son Yosef, in no motzasi chen be'enecha, his cover for covered for a Talmud, covered for a Ben.
You see.
The Tanakh says, look, I'm the father, I deserve a covering.
Yeah, but there's another side to the picture. The son also deserves cover.
The halach of Yehi covered Tamifa is the covered of another man.
Usually when there's a problem, both of them usually are not involved in a proper relationship.
More, because it says that Vayomer Yishavali, Vayishavalo, because Vayishtach and Yisrael are Rosh Hamikdash. So Yaakov Avinu bowed down towards the Rosh Hamikdash. So Chazal says, so Rashi says, why?
Rashi says, Ka'ola be'idlei segidla, which is the
thing. Ka'ola means a fox. In his day, bowed down to him. Because Yosef was a Malach, and therefore, since even though Yaakov Avinu was much greater than Yosef, but this politically, this was his. He was a great political ruler. He was in a high office. So Ta'ola Be'ignei Segidlo. So the Machuyev to bow. A person should bow down to an individual who is in a certain position. Now later it says like this. It says, "Va'yikach et vamel va'yomel Yosef v'nei avicha chola." Va'yikach ashnei vana v'imas nafas afayim. It says, "Va'yagid liyakov v'yomel v'nei bincha Yosef boi lecha." It says, "Va'yischazek Yisrael v'yeshiv al amika." So Chazal say, "What does it mean? Va'yischazek Yisrael v'yeshiv al amika?" Oma afal pishehu b'nei melechu achalek lo kavo mikan shecholki kavo l'mal. They say, see, that a person must give cover to the Malchus. Well, that's the question. Why, before Rashi says, Vayishtach Yisrael, so he says, Ta'ola Be'ignei Segidle. Right? And here Rashi says that, Oma Afati Shubini Melechu Achal Go Cover. I mean, is it the same thing? It doesn't seem to be the same thing. So what? How do you know that it's the same action, basically? Why should you... Why do you say in one case it's Ta'ola B'idnei Segidle, and in the other case you say that it's Mikan Shechol can cover the Malchus? How do you know which is which? I'm just asking Agavor. Yeah? B'idnei Segidle is a political gesture. But Mikan Shechol can cover the Malchus is an objective halach. It's interesting, this is his own son. But you see, even in relating to his own son, he wasn't just relating to him in an emotional framework as a father to us all. And he was very close with Yosef, as you remember. But nevertheless, you see that it was always with Chachma that he carried out his relationship. An interesting thing. This is where you see the difference between Yadis and between the Hamonam and Alei Hamonam, even philosophers. Why is it, what is the difference between the two? What's the difference between the two? You're right. One, the first one is a political gesture. The second one is not a political gesture. The second one is a realistic halachic phenomenon. Of course, we say the Kansh of Chol can cover the Malchus. It means Allah, it must be Chol can cover the Malchus. The difference is really can be shown from the situation itself, from the story itself. You see? In the first case, it was Vayomi Shevali Vayishevalo, so he stopped himself as a Nita. What is? He's a Melech. You have to be aware, it's a practical thing, you have to be aware of a person's emotions. If a person is a Melech, you have to know he's in a different mental framework. And just because you're related to him doesn't give you a right not to function in a way that his mentality is involved in. That was the Chokhmah of Yaakov Avinu, okay? An objective framework. But in the second one, it says like this, Vayagid liYaakov Vayomer Hinei Bincha Yosef Boi Lecha. Right? So, Vayischazek Yisrael Vayeshev Al Amika means before Yosef came in. Vayischazek Yisrael Vayeshev Al Amika. He could have been reclining when Yosef walked in. Why did he? In the first instance, it was a political gesture. So after he swore, so then he said to him like this. So he said, after he swore, so he showed him covet to all the big men to get away. But in the second instance, he didn't have to. He's sick, so he can lie in bed. Yosef walks in, and he's a sick man. No, by his chazik shavu Yosef Amika before he came in, he made bincha Yosef boiler. So that was not a political gesture. That was an objective. He was carrying out an objective action. Why? Because That's what the Chazal said. The Kansha Tov and Shechov and Tov Lamochas. It's a different gift because it's an objective halacha. So even though he's sick, so he sat on the bed because his halacha Tov and Tov Lamochas. The second one was halacha. First one was a political. First one is not halacha. First one was a political gesture. The second one was a halachic phenomenon. That Chol can cover the Malchus. Malchus demands cover. Even Moshe Rabbeinu was covered to cover the power. Halacha Chol can cover the Malchus. Malchus represents the reason why. But that's what the halacha is. So you see, in the activities of Yaakov with Yosef, within a few psukim, you see three. Besides the relationship between a father and a son, you see three conscious, rational types of activity. First one was covered for a Ben, and Mamas HaSachim Barakha. He covered Talmudcha, Pincha, his Chavalach HaShalach, the way he spoke with him. Secondly, there was a recognition of the framework of Yosef's mind, which was he was at that moment a great political figure. Tola Bignei Sigdigle was a rational political move. And third, a halachic move. Malchus requires covered by his chazik shalom, yesh vola mikra. And that's Yadis. That's different, completely different approach in human relations. It takes human relations and places it on an objective plane. I mentioned every relationship. There's no relationship that's exempt from that type of a phenomenon. And especially being Ishtar. That's an area where a lot of people have problems, and marital problems. The problems are because of one reason, basically. Because they just want to have the benefit from a relationship based purely upon emotions, without any type of machshava involved, without any type of halachic phenomenon. And that can't be. The person who relates in that way is simply reduced to the animal level, and he can't be successful with it. The emotions are not going to work out together. The chances of the emotions working out together are nil. That's the obvious. That's a lot. Before I get back to one, but I want to say one thing. Yadus maintains that the personalistic element, if the person's element is it can never be successful. It can never be successful because really it's a part of man that's trying to go back to an infantile state. You see. And as long as he functions on that plane, he can't be successful. Because his infantile needs, which are basically endless, are being matched up against another infant's needs. And it's impossible to work out. In order for an individual to be able to have a relationship, it must be raised to an objective level where he doesn't just give free rein to his emotions. Must be on that level. If it's not on that level, it's not a relationship. From the point of view, also why it has to be so. Because from a philosophical point of view, what you're saying is, if a person has any relationship, you know, one psychologist one time said, that in analyzing the human mind, he says you have to make sure that you analyze every area. It can't be any, it has to be no holds barred. You can't leave any area unanalyzed. Why? He says it would be as if the police would give out a statement that a certain area we're not going to arrest anybody. Anybody in this area, we're not going to arrest. You can be sure all the criminals are going to gather to that area. You see? So he says in analyzing a person, we can't leave any area exempt from analysis, because that's where all the complexes are going to go to that area, and then you can't get to the person. But it's not only true from an analytic point of view, it's true from a philosophical point of view, that in order for a person to function on a philosophical level, there can't be any area in life which is exempt, because that's the area where all these crazy emotions are going to get involved in. That's why halacha places a tremendous restriction on a person, and it doesn't allow him to have any relationship whatsoever. It's an amazing thing. Any relationship whatsoever without the halachic, without the halacha involved. You see. Now, how does it, well, you're asking me a good question, how do the two work?
Yeah.
Possibly that we're going to bring back, you showed me this last week, that it was possible to believe we're going to bring back Kabbalah. Why do they think that you can't bring din back to Bonos? Because they maintain that we have reached the level of we don't need carbonic primitives, any carbonos. That means that's a total denial of human nature. The others, on the contrary, carbonos is something that brings a person in line with his true nature, his true instincts. And unless you have a knowledge of a person's instincts, there can't be any perfection. And you're just covering everything up, and you commit the worst wishes, and they'll find they'll give you an excuse. Okay? Give you an excuse. So that's a totally different thing altogether. What Yadus demands is like this. Yadus demands that a person has a total knowledge of his instinctual nature. He recognizes instinctual nature. Not only that he recognizes instinctual nature just as a recognition, but also that he satisfies his instinctual nature to a certain degree. You see. To a certain degree. If he doesn't satisfy his instinctual nature, then it's the same thing as non-recognition. That's why the Gemara says that a Yitzhahara is Merachek Yemin and Makar V'Smol. That a person should treat the Yitzhahara, keep him in a state of limbo. A little bit of satisfaction, and then he pushes it away.